Greetings, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Casterbrus podcast. Yes, with a K. Available on Casterbrus.com, iTunes, Stitcher.com, and Audioboo. It all started as a mild curiosity by these Casterbrites, and now it's turned into quite a spirit of adventure, don't you think? Listen!
Ladies and gentlemen, it's a podcast with a K. My name's Christian Corley. With me this week are James McLean, Ryan Turnover, and our special guest, Nick Roberto of Rubber Toe Replicas. Hello, everyone. Hello, Nick.
Hello. How are you doing?
Nice of you to join us. I'm well. How are you?
Yes, very good. Thank you.
Excellent. That's good news. Where are you speaking to us today from?
Well, I am in a cold, wet, windy Wales.
Okay. Sorry. Are you in a shed or is that your workshop?
This is the workshop. This is like the clean office-y type side of workshop.
Okay.
There's my sister over there making vortex manipulators for us. You see her?
Nice.
She's nice, that kind of cool.
She's doing the stitching now.
Okay. That's excellent. James McLean, how are you?
Thank you.
You've turned into a line drawing of the 11th Doctor this week.
Yes, conserve my power. I've lost my staff, so I've only got the butler on the wheelie generator.
James, I have to tell you, you're sounding a bit Cyberman-esque. That's the most surreal statement I've ever heard. Brian Terranova, how are you?
Yes.
Hello. You all right?
Swell, I am good, yes.
You've been time traveling in any other galaxies or conventions this past weekend?
Not this past weekend, no. I had some time off. Yeah, just all the fun from last weekend. So.
Yep, okay, that's good news. Okay, so, well, we don't have a Doctor Who episode to talk about this week, which is kind of weird because, you know, we've been doing it for three months of solid Doctor Who. And we've also got the other guest this week. We've got little Bruce Corley, the time tot, who's off school this afternoon, which you might hear from time to time. And what we're going to do is I'm going to hand over to Brian for a few moments, who's going to suggest, ladies and gentlemen, that we talk about the that other thing that has happened, the Children in Need clip of the Doctor Christmas special, which remains untitled. There you go, Brian.
The other thing that has happened. There was that thing that happened, and Santa Claus was a part of it. I love when Christian throws things at me like that. Actually, no, it is kind of cool that the trailer so far, because we all just kind of were set with Santa Claus is in Doctor Who, and then now we seem to have, there's something more to it at least. Nick might be looking at me with knowing eyes, because I understand Nick was on the set of the Christmas special.
I made some stuff for it, yeah. Some really nice things. Obviously, can't say what. But I haven't actually seen that trailer yet.
The
Christmas one, no. So, I made a couple of things for it. And big things. Lots of big things.
Wow, nice.
Go bang.
Looking forward to seeing this when they pop up on your site. I love that. I love when after an episode airs, you post up the things that you have made. It's nice to see that on your Twitter and your Facebook.
I really sort of started doing it this series. I didn't know how, if I was allowed to do it, first of all, because sometimes you've got to wait for things to come out on the Doctor Who sites and stuff like that. But I thought, well, you know, I'll have a go. If I get told off, I won't do it again.
Nice.
I kept doing. I did that with obviously the Cube and I can't remember. What they do, the mini.
Well, some of the things, yeah, the TARDIS cube, you made the mini TARDIS, which, by the way, tons of us thought that they were just using one of the toys, and then you post up that you actually made that thing.
Yeah, I knew they. I mean, the toy version, I got them. I can get them like here, so you can see. I know you can't see. But...
Yeah, no, we can see. Fair enough. Getting an exclusive.
I'm back. That's the toy.
Okay.
And then that's my one. So there's
Oh yeah.
And you know, there's a bit in it, but not much as a
It's taller. I
noticed on eBay that straight away people were trying to sell the character options version as a screen accurate prop straight away, but you know. So I'm hoping to get around to do them next year, but they are a bit of a nuisance, as is everything I make. So,
how much time do you typically get for making a prop on the show? Does it vary? Or?
For this TARDIS now, I had to make the solid version, and then I had to make a set of doors, because you know when they're inside the full-scale TARDIS and he's got the little doors on the wall, I had to make those doors. I had the little doors, the little TARDIS, and I had to make a rubber version. I think I had about 2 weeks to do that lot. So it was pretty tight doing all that. But then it was a great thing to make. I didn't mind, you know, doing the hours for it. I remember doing quite a few late nights on it back in, it must have been March, April or something this year.
Wow, geez, yeah.
Yeah.
Now, the rubber one, was that a stunt one? Was that for the tumble down the...
Yeah, I think what happened, the rubber one was for obviously when they're dropping it or something, but they wanted to drop it, because this is what happens when they do the filming, they just change everything. They wanted to drop it, but with the doors open, and I didn't make the rubber one with doors open, so they decided to use the hero prop and drop it.
Hence, no.
They break everything. And then, because they broke it, it had to go back in for a respray then. But I didn't do the respray. Somebody else did it. And they used a gloss paint instead of a satin or matte paint. So on the close-ups on the show, that one looked a little bit glossy rather than the matte finish you're supposed to have. But these things happen all the time. You know, it's all spur-of-the-moment decisions. And, you know, the filming crew just go with what they've got. And if they want to do that, they do it, don't they? And then it's up to us to fix it. So.
Yeah, and I mean, and you know, fixes on sets goes with what you had mentioned on the RPF not long ago about how they've super glued the sonic screwdriver closed.
Yeah, yeah, I think the standby props guys, they're sponsored by super glue, you know, glue everything. It's shocking the state of some of the props that it comes back in is just super glue everywhere. But then, you know, the prop is a very small part of a scene, the props has got to be there and play its part, and they have to get on with it. You know, I shudder to think how much it costs to hold film in for an hour or something, the amount of people on, you know, waiting around and the equipment. And
are you used to that though? Are you used to them kind of beating up your props? Like, is that just something you get used to, or is every piece still like your baby, your child? And
you know they're gonna give everything a right shoe in. It's gonna come back broken up in millions of pieces. It happens. Then, you know, it's very everything's always rush, you know, with Doctor Who. Because I was on it for 6 years, wasn't I? As a full time member of staff, and then, you know, I left then to set up my own props company. To sort of, because I couldn't cope with it anymore. The demand of it was so full on. I started when I was about 25, 26, and then after 6 years, I was just, you know, I had to take a little bit of a step back because the demand of what you had to do, you have to make props in no time at all, you have to be there when they break them, you know, it was you know, they just break everything.
It's an all-encompassing job from what I'm hearing of anybody who works on that show, so it's interesting to hear how full-time it is for you as well.
Yeah, it's a bit of a unique program, isn't it? Because like, we have lots of other, obviously, loads of other TV programs are made, and you might have to make a set of, a hospital. And it's quite easy just to go out and make a set of a hospital compared to a set of a spaceship, because you can't go out and buy spaceship flight controls. Everything's got to be made or amalgamated from different parts. It's quite a demanding show to work on. But it's also good fun, I think. That's the problem.
Yeah. You said the props come back to you. Do you get to keep the things you made, or do they keep the stuff that you make? Do they come back to you for repair? Is that it, or?
Well, yeah. Because I'm not at the full time Doctor Who props workshop. I've got my own workshop now. I'm lucky enough to stay away from that. I'll make something, and then if it does need a quick repair, then it goes to somebody else to take care of. I'm quite lucky. I don't have to deal with that anymore. Hidden away. I like to hide away in my workshop, away from all the drama.
Nice, yes. I'm looking back through some of the photos on your Facebook page from way back in series one, and you had a hand in making the bomb that Captain Jack was on.
Yeah, that was actually one of the first things I had to make. It was because when Doctor Who started, they didn't have a props department. They were sort of farming out work to a local company, which I worked in. And obviously then they realised that there was loads and loads of props needed, and it was really expensive to get them made by farming out to another company. So they then decided to start up their own props department, and I started to work for them then. That bomb was good fun. That's in the Doctor Who Experience, that is now.
Yeah. The story that gets told for that, though, is Bad Wolf was kind of put in late in the game in Series 1, and they didn't get the memo out to all the writers to include it somewhere, but they said the props department kind of clocked onto it and wrote that, if I say it correctly, Schlechter Wolf on the bomb. Was that you guys? Did you do that?
No, I don't know about that one.
No, okay, because it's an interesting story. Is that the fact that it is there? It says Bad Wolf on the bomb, but I don't know where it came from. But the story was that the prop guys just kind of did it on their own. So,
I'm not sure about that one.
It was an interesting story, nonetheless.
Yeah, it's a good one.
Yeah. What other shows do you make props for then? Since you moved out on your own.
Well, we were lucky in South Wales that obviously Doctor Who started up. And then Sarah Jane and then Tortured, so I did quite a lot of stuff on that. Lots of stuff on Merlin. And then we have sort of smaller local TV programs. We've got a Welsh one, Welsh speaking one, Poblacum. And then there's Casualty and I can't remember them all. We've done quite a bit on the new Aliens and Wizards, which is a BBC children's programme to sort of take to the Sarah Jane Adventures place. So I did quite a lot of weapons and stuff for that this year. But me, about half the year I'm sort of making props for the TV shows, and then the other half of the year we're doing the replicas. So the two businesses work quite well side by side. So now we're really busy with the replicas, and Doctor Who has just started post-production again. So I'll probably get involved now in the new year, when the replicas go quiet. So then in the year I can make loads of new stuff for Doctor Who, pick out the good stuff, ready to reproduce and sell when it's quiet, you know?
Nice.
What a unique position to be in.
That was actually my next question. How do you balance doing the two, the replica and the other? So it literally is an even split like that?
Yeah, I always seem to get really lucky with the timing that, you know, this year, the middle part of this year when Doctor Who was filming, I was really busy making all the props, and I was really lucky to make that cube and the TARDIS for that episode, because I knew as soon as I had the phone call, oh, we've got to make a Gallifreyan cube, I was like, ah, that sounds good. It was just like, you know, I knew it would be like a nice hand prop.
Yeah.
And everyone loves all the Gallifreyan script, don't they? You know,
absolutely.
When I saw a picture of it, I was like, oh, that's going to be a good one. So, yeah, and then so Doctor Who's really busy. That all quietens down. Literally, you know, that episode of the cube on, I started, released that cube straight after, and since then we've just been full on, haven't stopped. Which is the Christmas market sort of picked up early, you know.
Yeah, I was going to say, I know quite a few people have already picked up one. It's on my hit list. As you know, I've already gotten two of your props, the Vortex Manipulator and the 11th, 12th Doctor Sonic Screwdriver.
Not this one.
Not that I want that one, but no, that's not the clock one you just showed a picture of, is it?
No, the clock one's right here.
Nice.
Yeah, what do you think of that one? Do you think that's a goer? I don't know.
Well, you know, honestly, I think people do like functionality. I think most of the people in like my realm, the prop replica realm, we like to have them as they were on the screen.
Yeah.
So when you get stuff like that, but I do know other people who enjoy the novelty items as well. For instance, you give them a Vortex Manipulator that's actually a watch, they would wear it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So yeah, I think somebody would do that, especially like you said, they love their Gallifreyan script. People would dig into that. But I got to see one of your cubes this past weekend. I was at Long Island Doctor Who, and Andrew Beach was there with his.
Right.
It's great weight. It's a great feeling, great looking prop. It's not one of those ones. You know, we talk about this quite often, my friends and I anyway, and sometimes in the podcast, with props on TV shows, certainly in the past. When we see old props from the old series of Doctor Who, they generally don't look as nice as they did on screen in person. But your stuff seemed to look just as accurate, just as clean. It's very nice to see that kind of detail there, that, you know, you get this item that looks like it literally just walked off the screen.
Yeah, the cube was, it's just a nice sharp-looking prop, isn't it? It's, you know, I was lucky enough this year to buy myself a laser cutter, which I did most of the work on. So you just get that extra sharpness and crispiness to it. You know, we do quite a lot of cold casting. A lot of our products are cold cast brass and aluminium, and so we're quite familiar with how to do it. And then when I had the initial brief to make it, I was like, well, that does fit into like an aluminium cold casting finish. And the art department said, yeah, go with that. So it's something that it was almost made for us to make, in a way, the cube.
Nice.
It was the type of thing we would make and the type of thing that we would design ourselves. Yeah, it was. We were fortunate enough for somebody else to design it for us and ask us to do it.
Yeah, I do like what? I'm sorry.
I do like the cube. There's hundreds of them everywhere.
Nice. Like a little invasion.
Yeah, you know.
When you get a design sketch,
mm-hmm.
how often do you have to change it in order to actually make it be a reality, make it be a prop, or do oftentimes does it stay exactly as the drawing?
Well, going back when I was full-time on Doctor Who, it all depends on your time scale and if the actual drawing can be interpreted into a three-dimensional piece. A lot of the time we get a drawing of something that looks great on a flat bit of paper, but you're like, well, hang on a minute, that doesn't work. You know, that line doesn't do that in a three-dimensional space. So at the end of the day, you've got to get the prop ready and on set for a deadline. If you've got the time, then great, you can spend more time on it. If not, you've got to get something that looks as much like the picture that you can and then get it to them. So you have quite a bit of input.
Is that ever an issue for anybody on set, some of the producers or the designers, that something couldn't be realized, or are they pretty understanding of that?
I think they're pretty understanding, yeah. You know, at the end, it's not their main concern, I think. No problem. Not that I've had, anyway. Everything looks really good. Just make it look good, you know.
I know. Obviously, you make a lot of hand props or a lot of hand-sized props, but in the episode Time Heist, you also made the vault door.
Oh,
and
God.
Of course, we talked about the bomb as well. But, I mean, what is it like, you know, do you never know what they're going to throw at you?
No. That was a strange one. Getting asked to make that door, because I used to make really big stuff. Like, I made the DMD machine. Do you remember that big white machine?
Yes.
Yeah, I made that. That was one of the first big things I made. And then I made the camper van episode, going way back when you had, like, those cat people in it. I made that. But I could make these big things, huge MDF structures, if need be. But I tried to sort of get away from doing it. I do like making the hand props, but the last big thing I made for them was the TARDIS console. I generally wouldn't want to make it, but because it's such a big iconic piece, I thought I had to do it. You know, I want to put my name to a TARDIS console. Why not?
Nice. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
You know, and I'll tell you what, that TARDIS console is one that a lot of people hail as the best right now since the classic series. You really have a nice classic-inspired feel to it.
Yeah, it's a nice shape, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
It was a hell of a complicated thing to make, because there wasn't, even though the cuts are straight, everything had like a compound mitre cut on it, so which is like, you know, you're cutting at an angle on an angle, and it pickled my head a little bit. I had to buy a couple of special saws to do all the cuts, but I think it looks great. It's a nice TARDIS.
And I love that you have controls that actually have metal components to them, rather than a lot of times metal will be faked on screen with paints and woods or plastic or so on, but you actually went ahead and made brass handles, brass levers, and
yeah, those aluminum. Levers, weren't they? Yeah, I remember going to the metal shop to get that chunk of brass for the main handle. You know, like, blimmin' heck, they put that on the weighing scales. It's like, that'd be £80, please. It was a hell of a chunk of brass, and putting that on the lathe as well to turn it. I think I put all my safety gear on that day. It came flying off.
Awesome. Well, they look great. They look. I mean, it's honestly, it's like one of the most iconic pieces of that console. You know, you have as Matt Smith throws the levers, he throws in both directions. Whereas Capaldi, you know, they've all got their own style with it, but somehow you just want to be the guy there pulling those levers. They just look so. They look so realistic. It looks like it's an actual functioning machine. It's such a nice touch.
Yeah, I think Michael Pickwell, the designer, he wanted to get away from a TARDIS console where you just stick stuff on it. Like a lot of the first TARDIS from the new series, there was just, you know, there was lots of stuff just chucked on and glued from IKEA. And in my opinion, I always didn't really like that whole. I think everything on the console should be made from scratch. You shouldn't really go and buy stuff. I mean, on the new one, there is bought bits on there, like there's old narrow gauge railway levers on there. But I think they work quite well on it.
Yeah.
The sucky psychic interface one, which he started using a couple of times this last series. Penny Howard did that one. Like there was like there's six segments on the console, isn't there? And I did four of them. Penny did the psychic interface one. And then Alan did the clockworky one with all the spinning gears. I don't think we've seen it that much.
Yeah, we hadn't actually seen much of that that psychic panel, like you said, until they started using it this year. It was always kind of just there. They didn't really do much with it. So it is interesting to see these panels get more use. But it's great. It was a big collaborative effort then, this thing.
Yeah, basically I did it from, I made from the ground up to the top of the big things that go round and round. And then as I was pushed for time, the two segments went off to Penny and Alan to finish off. And I had to do the other four.
Christian's back, and then he's not.
He's gone again.
And we lost James. Don't know what happened to James. But anyway.
Unfortunately, James had to bow out due to bandwidth issues, unfortunately. He's,
gotcha.
I don't know if you spoke to him after I left, but he did have to... he was turned into a Cyberman, wasn't he, when we introduced him yesterday. So he's been cybernized, sadly. That's it for James. This week he'll be Cyber James.
Christian, you missed some good stuff, though. By the way, you're gonna enjoy watching.
I've been in and out, and I've caught some interesting snippets. Unfortunately, some terrible things have been taking place here. Casterbris Towers.
So Nick, I'm sorry to interrupt, Christian, but I was going back through your Facebook pictures again, and I have a question.
Mm-hmm.
Torchwood, the Doctor's hand in the jar.
Yeah.
How is that actually achieved? Like, what is that?
Well, yeah, the hand.
Yeah, because I got to tell you, as a prop collector, that's kind of one I want. Trying to realize how to make it, tips would be...
The hand was made by Neil Gorton and his team at Millennium Effects. I don't know how they do it. I think it actually was a cast of David's hand.
Awesome.
And looks good, though, doesn't it? But wouldn't that make a great fish tank?
right?
Canister. Yeah.
So what did you make on it then? I did
the whole tank.
Okay.
We were just given the hand. So we sort of made it was a Perspex tube, and then we made the top and bottom bit. The handle was some sort of military component we were given. And then we had to make a special system at the bottom to disperse the bubbles evenly. So we made a vac form pattern, which I stuck on the bottom, and then we just plugged it into an airline and gave it over to the special effects people to do their thing. Yeah, it'd be a lovely prop, wouldn't it? The problem if I had to reproduce that one would be I don't like mixing water and electronics for something you're going to sell. And obviously, if you've got standing water again, then it's just going to go a bit funky, isn't it, over time.
Yeah, fair enough. So. I was also curious how whatever kind of materials they use for the hand would survive in that water long enough as well, like long term.
I guess the prosthetic people just know what they're doing, don't they? I mean, Neil, he's been doing it for a long time now, and he's doing a lot of the, you know, most things in Britain, TV-wise, he's involved in. He's a good guy. He's a nice guy, Neil.
Oh, yeah.
A lot at one point. Because he at one point had the Doctor Who license, didn't he? And he'd always come to me for, like, reference and, you know, how'd I do this, how'd I do that? And, of course, he did his MFX Sonic. They helped a bit with that as well. He was lucky, nice enough to give me one when he was doing it, and then he hasn't actually asked for one of mine yet, so
oh, no.
We'll see if he wants one.
I've got one of his, actually. I can tell you that the day that that came out, I was thrilled. It was one of those props that, you know, when you first saw it, and I know that that's more for, like, the Series 4 kind of look, but when you first saw it in Series 1 come out, as a prop collector, I was dying to have that thing, and then it took for 2009 for that to come out. You know, it's like I felt like a kid at Christmas when it finally happened. It was such a nice piece to bring home. I had that same feeling when you announced the 11th and 12th Dr. Sonic, because, again, it's one of those things where it's like, you know, these things get into the show, and immediately as a fan, you sit there and you say, I want this. I really want this. And you feel the wait takes forever. But then here, like, two guys connected to the show, but you're the guy who actually made the 11-12 Sonic for the show. It's just like, what a great lineage to have with that prop. Mm-hmm. Aside from just going, hey, I finally got that prop I wanted. Now it's got this great connection. And like you said, Neil is a great guy. And so are you. Like, you're both so easily approachable, which is fantastic, and you're very friendly and very helpful, so it's nice to have also that kind of memory associated with these items that we pick up from you as well. That's a big thing for me.
Yeah, it took a while to get it going, but I guess when big companies come in and try and make these things, they have the whole, well, they've got to first of all get hold of the BBC, they've got to get it measured and drawn, and then they've got to get their prototypes made, and they've got to get it signed off, and they ship it off somewhere to get made. I find it obviously quite easy to get the BBC to agree what I want to do, because they just go, well, did you make the original? I said, yep, that's fine. So they fight off, and then, you know, I was just, if anyone's going to make it, I'll probably find it the easiest to do it.
Well, and I know they're a hot item, and I know a lot of people are really anxious. You've kind of tweeted that, which one should I do next? You know, and you got a lot of fan reaction from that, because I can tell you, they want you to do them all.
Yeah, I will one day. Yeah. I will one day. I'm only a small business. I don't want to go big. You know, there's myself, my wife, and then I've got a young lad working with me, and I've got my sister behind me making stuff as well. I don't want to go huge, because I think you lose a lot of what we're about. We're a small company trying to make nice stuff, and it's personal, and we can deal with customers on one-to-one basis. You know, I could go and get stuff made somewhere else on mass production level. I don't know if I want to do that. I want to keep everything made as much as I can in Wales, if not the UK, and just keep myself at a nice level where I'm not too busy.
What would you do if the worst happened and Doctor Who was cancelled or went off air for 2 or 3 years? How would you change your strategy then? Would you start making classic items?
Well, I sell my own stuff that I make and design. And I sort of, at the same time as I'm building up Rubber to Rep, because I'm building up my own brand of stuff, and then I've also, because I'm a prop maker, I can just go around and try and find some work elsewhere, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Plenty of work going on in Cardiff, and we've got the new Pinewood Studios being built in Cardiff as well, so, you know, I've never had to cross the Severn Bridge to go and look for work as yet.
Okay.
So, you know, I've always had to worked in Cardiff. Plenty of work going on in Cardiff. We've got Da Vinci Demons being made up the road in Swansea. You know, I could go and work up there, but I quite like working for myself.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't have to answer to anybody then.
Yeah.
I remember a while ago, too, you had announced a couple of watches, like leather bands with colored lights that you had designed. And that was like your own rubber toe replica thing, as you said, your original.
Yeah.
Have you ever done anything like that, where you created something like that, and the TV show was kind of like, hey, you know what, we'd actually like to use that?
I haven't, no. There's a... Back a while ago when, say, is it Terry Nation or something? He designed a part of the Dalek, so he had his name on it, so he gets the cut of royalties. I think the BBC avoid that now, because they know if I made something and it got on TV, and then down the road I went, well, I designed that, I want 20% of everything that you make on it.
Gotcha.
With dead faces, you know. I've also wanted to make my own design, say, Sonic Screwdriver, take it into them, say, here you are, do you want to use this? And they might go, yeah, but then I think they'd work out, hang on a minute, we can't do that. Because I'd probably be sorted for life then, wouldn't I? 12% off every toy.
So you do have your own Sonic screwdriver? Is that what you said? You've designed your own?
I'm working on one. Because I've had all the parts made for the 11th and 12th. I'm having them all cut out of aluminium, so I'm going to do an all-aluminium one. And I'm going to tweak it here and there and do some funky stuff on it when I get around to it. Yeah.
Well, that's pretty cool. I'm looking forward to that. Yeah, I love original concepts.
I think I'll do a little build thread on the RPF on it. You know.
Oh, cool. Yeah.
Here, I've got all the pieces in. I got, because when you make all this stuff for Doctor Who, and being like a creative person, you always want to be making things. And I got so many ideas, because a lot of the stuff I make of my own design is taking the best bits from Doctor Who and then putting them into my stuff.
I do want to say, before we go too far, you and I have both now mentioned the RPF, and for those of you listening or watching, we should mention that is the replicaproforum.com. It is actually the RPF.com. It's a great resource for prop makers, prop collectors, and people just starting out in the whole trade of it. And Nick is pretty active on there with his stuff, which is great. Neil Gorton was on there for a while. And then there's just a whole host of people who just love to show their props or love to show the work that they started. It's a great, great resource, great, helpful community. So if you're wondering what the RPF was, there you go.
Brian, could you ready yourself and just when you'll know when the time is right, could you just give us that URL once more? Just wait a moment.
TheRPF.com.
Thank you.
Is that my good radio announcer voice? Did I do well there for you?
Yeah, it wasn't bad. I should interject in your fascinating conversation, guys, and we'll continue in a moment. I'm just playing with these sounds today, because that's obviously the second one I've done, and I'm really struggling not to click them. Because basically, we were looking at a new way of doing the podcast with some, basically to cut down on editing, all the sounds that you hear at the beginning of the podcast, like John Guiler doing his first Doctor or fourth Doctor voice, and then the theme tune, we wouldn't have to post-product them. They'd basically, or post-produce them. They'd just come straight in. I'd just fade them in. It'd be like a radio show. But unfortunately, I didn't have it set up quite right because there wasn't time to check it out beforehand, and it led to lots of problems, which is why I'm staring at these sound effects at the moment. I'm going to try and avoid not clicking any more of them. I'm interested, though. Is there kind of my headphones. Is there a way of doing props cheaply, Nick, that someone just getting into prop building could do?
Yeah, there's the whole go to your toy shop, buy a Nerf gun, spray it black, bit of silver paint. You know, there's that way to get into it. That's quite it's good fun actually doing that. You know, a lot of the times in the old days, we used to just buy loads of bits and bobs and stick it all together, spray it black, again, bit of silver paint. It all looks good. Kit bashing as well, that's still quite used a lot, I think. We just buy loads of Airfix kits, bits, and
Put
it all on a spaceship or something.
Is that a process that's still used?
I haven't used it. Not the kit bashing one, no. But I haven't made a spaceship yet, apart from the TARDIS model, but that's not really a...
That's how they did the Star Destroyers in Star Wars, wasn't it? That's sort of all the detail on those. That's my son.
Wouldn't be a podcast without that.
Oh, I know, yeah. Yes. Okay.
What was it like, actually, Nick, working on the Daleks for the 50th, since... you didn't do them from scratch. You actually kind of reworked the 12 or the 18-inch toys? Do you remember?
Oh, get a ruler. I don't think they were 18, were they? They must have been about 12 inches.
The 12 inches, okay.
It was, it wasn't challenging. It was just a lot of it. We had to just basically strip them all back, take them apart, respray everything. We had to get the little guns made out of metal, and just put them back together. And then dirty them down a bit. They look good. I don't think you noticed on screen at all.
No.
They weren't shown that much. Again, this is one of those things where you spend like 2-3 weeks doing something, and then it's on TV for like that long. You're like, oh, it's 3 weeks of my life.
Well, there was a shot where the TARDIS breaks through a wall and knocks a couple of those Daleks over. I'm assuming those were the model Daleks. Was that a model TARDIS as well?
No, that was the Daleks were full size, because I remember there was a Dalek fabricating going on at that point, and I remember Danny from the FX place. He loves blowing things up, doesn't he, Danny?
Yeah.
Yeah. No, they were full size Daleks, they were. I don't know if it's TARDIS. Not sure.
Yeah, it fooled me. Huh. Christian, you have anything? I'm sorry, I keep talking the entire podcast.
No, that's absolutely fine. I'm just listening, really. I'm just
okay. Cool. So, you're a listener today.
I am the listener. Yeah.
So I tried to coax some Christmas information from Nick, but he's not talking.
Okay.
Mr. BBC will slap my wrist about it. I don't know much about it, to be honest. I haven't read the script or anything. I had a brief to make some stuff. I made it, delivered it, and that was it, really. I'll put pictures up once it's been aired. I'm just full-on deep into Sonic Screwdrivers at the moment. Just buffed up 15 just before I got onto this conversation with you guys to ship out today.
Nice.
And then I got another 20. I've got quite a lot of back orders to get through, which I've promised to get to people before Christmas. So I'm just working flat out on that.
What sort of places are they going to? Where are you shipping
to? I mean, we've got, in this batch going out tomorrow, there's Chile, America, Australia, Belgium, and UK. But most stuff is US and UK. And if you can be more specific, West Coast US.
Right.
Yeah, I'd say the split was like 60% US, 40% UK.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, you get orders from people in very obscure places, and like there's one guy in Hong Kong, he's bought about 4 of them. God knows what he's going to do with them. Reproduce them or something. I don't know. We'll see.
Wow, geez, 4 of them.
I know, what could you do with 4 of them?
right.
Yeah. But then he's bought 4 of everything. You know, He's bought 4 cubes, 4 TARDIS doors, 4 Sonics.
That sounds like an investment to me.
Yeah, right.
Well, there's a dress. He's got a really big address, and it's like at the top floor of some big tower, I think. So perhaps he's a very wealthy Hong Kongman. Is that right? I guess Hong Kongman? I don't know.
Well, Hong Kong's in China now, isn't it? So he's probably
Chinese. Yeah.
You know, I get buying too. In all honesty, if I could. With a lot of these props, I would want 2, you know, 1 for display and 1 for play. This way, if something ever happened, you always had one pristine one that was there surviving. But 4 of them is a little bit of a stretch for me.
Yeah. Who knows? Yeah, so there's Sonic parts everywhere. There's cubes everywhere. We're going to be releasing some new things next week.
Nice.
Things, yeah. No, it's not a prop, but I wanted to make something that's a bit more affordable but nice. So that'll be coming next week, and we're just getting into the swing of things. We're getting ready for the next month, really, which is going to be really busy, just shipping out everything, which is it's quite a stressful couple of weeks. It's packing. Packing's not fun. And then next year now, I'm going to move on to try and maybe do some more Sonics, some different ones, if I can catch up with making the 11, 12 ones, because they just keep going. I need to make a clone, I think. Clone myself.
That would always be handy.
Yeah.
I like the fact too that you've made stands for Sonic screwdrivers and so on and other display bits, the coasters with the Gallifreyan script on them and the stands for the Sonics and so on. I like that you went that far because a lot of people, they don't think about that sort of stuff. Like, here's the prop, there you go. You know, they don't think what would be a nice way to display it. And I love this, but I love the display that came with the 11-12 Sonic. I love all the detail that's in that. Very Gallifreyan inspired. It's great. So I like that you do all that stuff. I like, and you know, when you talk about affordable,
you
know, it's great to know that you can go straight here and go, well, I got this Sonic, I need something to display it on. The 11-12 Sonic, by the way, for those listening, does come with a display, but if you have other ones in your collection, Nick offers stands for them, which is really nice.
Well, yeah, when I first approached the BBC about wanting a license to make stuff, I knew I couldn't just go out there with like 1 or 2 products that cost £500. I thought, right, you're going to have to make stuff that's affordable but functional as well. And like the Gallifreyan coasters, we had them in the workshop just lying around. We always used to use them as coasters. And I was always like, well, damn, if we ever have a license, they'd go really well, you know. So there was lots of things that just would be hanging around the workshop that we used for certain things. Again, like the sphere from the top of a Cillian star, the ball, we used that as a paperweight in the workshop. At the computer, and I was like, yeah, that would work as well. So I wanted to make stuff that was affordable, functional, but and handmade. And then, because now the whole thing is sort of split into two. We've got the smaller stuff, say, want to call it collectibles and coasters, that type of thing. And then you've got the replicas. And as we're growing, I could then approach to make the Sonic screwdrivers. I couldn't just jump in straight away and start making Sonics because I had to build my business up slowly and get the money behind me to start tackling these bigger props, you know. So everything sort of had its place. And, you know, it's growing and we're getting through some nice stuff now.
Yeah, it's a good natural stride that you did there. Because I know a lot of people who are very interested in the Jack Harkness squareness gun, your Dalek gun. There's these, you know, they're things. I have a long list of wants from your store, let me tell you. The coasters, though, you said you had them lying around and you guys used them as coasters. What were they? Did they start their lives as the dress for the Gallifreyan headgear?
Yeah, they were on the Dalton character, Cat Rossilian, his chest plate. But they were domed slightly, because what we would do, we'd make them flat, but then we'd heat them up with a hot air gun and then just press them into a mold to make them domed. But obviously, the ones that weren't good enough, we just leave hanging around, hence turned into coasters. So, I love making coasters. I have four different sets of coasters now. But I think it's a good thing, though, because they just, you know, they look nice and they got a function, yet they look, you know, they're really nice and docked too. And then, like you were saying, we make the stand so you can combine them and display your Sonics with them as well.
Yeah, I mean, they make great display pieces. It's you know, it's one thing, you want to, I mean, generally the way my thinking is, you want to have whatever is on display be the main attraction. So I generally like the stands to be nice and simple, and I think your stands are elegantly simple, but I like the fact that you can do something with those coasters. It's just a little bit more of set dressing that doesn't detract from what you're displaying. It kind of enhances it in a way, since it's Gallifreyan themed, it goes with it. Mm-hmm. So I like that aspect of it.
Yeah, I mean, before I had my own license, I did quite a lot of work with QMX, didn't I? They opened my eyes to this whole prop collecting scene because I didn't know anything about it. I was working on Doctor Who as a prop maker, and then one day the guys from QMX turned up to look at all the props, and obviously I got involved with them then, doing some artisan versions of the Sonics, and they took me over to Comic-Con, and I saw this whole world of prop collecting, and then I saw their products, what they were doing, and then I came home, and I was having a chat the wife about work and where we're going to go with it. Do I just keep being a prop maker? And then I said I've always wanted to have a license and make this stuff, but I always thought it'd be out of our grasp. But I had a conversation with the licensing team and they liked our ideas. And we all went from there, really. And obviously because I'd seen all this stuff that QMX were selling, obviously they've got their, Battlestar Galactica coasters and, you know, I was working their stand at Comic-Con and seeing all this stuff flying off their shelves. I'm thinking, well, there's none of this Doctor Who stuff that out there. I could do it myself, you know, with our name behind it, it should work. So BBC went with it. And that was 2 years ago. We've just renewed our contract, actually, for another 2 years, which is good.
Cool.
We're doing something right.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think you're definitely doing a lot right.
Yeah.
How did you actually get the job on Doctor Who then? How did that come about?
Well, I was working in a Cardiff company making architecture models and product displays, making all sorts of stuff, really, from little models up to big, you know, exhibition stands. And Doctor Who started filming, and they were using that company for us to make some stuff for Doctor Who. And then the art department decided they needed their own props department, and I sort of left and went to join Doctor Who because it was more fun. I went from making architecture models to making, you know, blasters and cool stuff like that. Who wouldn't want to go and do that?
Yeah, right, absolutely.
Yeah.
Nice. Yeah, because, I mean, I was always curious about their props department, where they got their people and so on, and the fact that you've started your own business after the fact, so it's interesting to see how that all turned out and became a reality for you, because I know so many people out there. I believe you're even speaking with my one friend Jimmy, who is starting he's had his own business for a while, painting props, and he's really wanting to get into the main thing. He and his dad had actually made some Dexter slide boxes for the TV series Dexter as well. So, you know, he wants to get into it, but I've watched his journey, but, you know, his thing was kind of, we did this one project for a TV show, and we're still doing our little thing inside. So I know you can just kind of slide into these things somehow, so it's interesting to see how you came about, especially for those out there thinking, oh, this could never be a reality for me. Well, it can be a reality for anybody so long as you try, basically.
I think there's plenty of work out there for prop makers at the moment, especially in the UK. We've got loads going on with the Marvel films and obviously Star Wars, and then where I am in South Wales, there's a huge TV industry happening. I think I was very lucky to get that position in Doctor Who to make a lot of the iconic props. You know, there's lots of prop makers out there who've got the same ability as I have, but I was just really lucky, I think. Right person, right time. And I think I was the right age as well. I had the energy and enthusiasm for it to work all these hours and, you know, to pull the cat out of the bag. Yeah.
It's amazing, too, how many of the props, like just going through the stuff that you've posted that you have made, how many of the things you've had a hand in that when I was watching the show, I'm like, yeah, I need that. That's a prop I need. And then I look back and I'm like, wow, it's all Nick. Like, so to know that it could potentially be a reality one day is a great thing, to see that like I can take that home one day. What do you think about people replicating your work? I know like on the RPF, there's a lot of people who just do it for themselves. Or some people who will do a run to help other people like myself who have collections. Like, what do you feel about that? Is that like, is it an honor to see somebody doing your work, or how do you feel about it?
Yeah, what's that saying? Imitation is
the sincere form of flattery.
That's the one. Yeah, imitation is sincere form of flattery. Yeah, I don't mind.
Nice.
They can go for it. They need any help. You know, I do get quite a few people asking me how I've done this, how I've done that. The problem is if you start answering them, they come back for more.
Yeah, yeah.
You know,
I'm one of those guys, sorry.
I don't know. Have you emailed me? It's funny you mentioned Jim. I just been talking to Jimmy on Facebook then, giving him some paint advice.
Nice. You know, that's the thing though, like when Neil Gorton first came out with his Sonic, I remember I had a couple questions for him. He was on the RPF. Again, he was approachable. I try not to bug you as much as I can, and I feel bad because sometimes I feel like I do. But it's very nice. It's something I don't know if it's something with British television versus American television, but it's something that you guys seem very approachable. It seems like it's more available to us to speak to you than if we wanted to speak to a prop maker from an American TV show. And I don't know why that is, but it's something I very much appreciate. I try not to abuse that, but it's a smaller world, it feels. Well, certainly the world feels smaller now, especially the fact that, you know, here I am speaking with Wales and Redcar via technology on the internet. You know, it's such a... Yes, Christian, that's you. But no, it's such a nice thing to be able to do, but it's interesting that for some reason, despite the fact that... there's so many, like, for instance, I love the X-Files, and I've always wanted props from the X-Files, but I can't imagine talking to the props department from the X-Files the way I can speak with you or Neil, and it's,
well, they probably all quit, haven't they?
Yeah, but they've moved on to other places, but, you know.
I think the British are quite like that. I think we're just polite, aren't we?
Yeah.
Are we?
Most of us are, I think most of us are, yeah.
Got us at the right time.
The ones outside of London, yeah.
Yeah, I don't venture into London. It stresses me out.
I try not to.
Yeah. I don't venture out of Wales much.
I got lost the last time I went to London, so I tend not to go that often these days.
Yeah. It's funny, I'm that way with New York here. It's a nice place to like visit for a day, but I can't be there long term. Yeah.
Well, my sister lives in London, so that makes it quite difficult to say, no, I'm not going to London. No, I'm not going to London. Oh, well, after, won't I? My sister lives there, so.
I like London, in London's defense. I had fun when I was there.
You're in New York, are you?
Me? I'm outside Philadelphia, actually.
All right.
So, yeah.
One day to do, I don't know how I could pull it up, I'd love to do the Comic-Con in New York.
Oh, yeah?
Plastic one to do, yeah.
Well, I'll tell you what, Nick. Actually, I am on staff with Long Island Doctor Who. It's a Doctor Who-specific convention, obviously in Long Island, New York. It's going to be in its third year now next year. They're just moving to a larger venue. If you're interested in bringing your stuff and coming and being a speaker or having a table, I'm sure that would be the prime venue for you. We've just, this past weekend, we had Paul McGann and Colin Baker, Nicola Bryant, like tons of stars from the show. I'm sure I could speak to them and have you come on out. I'm sure they'd love that.
Long Island, there's waves there, isn't there?
There's waves there, yeah.
Yeah, I'll be coming.
It's safe, don't you worry. No, it's very cool. I mean, if you want to do New York Comic Con, which is a gigantic venue, and believe me, you'll have plenty of people interested in your stuff there, too. I know so many Doctor Who fans that go to that, but I think Long Island obviously would be an ideal spot as well if you're interested.
Yeah, yeah. What time of year is that?
November. It's next year. It is November, I believe, 13th through the 15th.
Sounds good. I'm doing Gallifrey 1 in LA in November. So they're shipping me over with all my stuff, and then because I've done quite a lot of the West Coast ones, and
yeah.
Then you go over there, do the shows, and I just bum around on the beach then for about a week before I go home. But
February? Isn't that one February?
Yeah. Is it warm in LA in February?
You said November, so I got confused there. February. Yeah,
November.
Gallifrey 1's a nice one. I was there in 2010. I we know the guy who runs it. He's a nice guy. I just saw him this weekend, actually.
All right.
On Lions, yeah, so. It's a nice time there, Gallifrey 1.
Yeah, I'd love to go to New York. Yeah, we're good. You have to hook me up with get it going, organize it.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I'll speak to the guys for sure. I mean, by all means, continue on with New York Comic Con if you'd like to, because, like I said, it's a fun one, but I think you'd enjoy L.I. Who. It's nice, it's friendly, and the people, they just really get a kick out of you guys coming out to be there for it. And I know so many people are interested in your props. I think it would be a great avenue for you.
Mm. Yeah, I will do.
Cool. Yeah. So do you like that? Do you like traveling to the conventions then?
I like going to California. That was good.
I don't blame you.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, because, like, you know, I surf quite a lot, and that was one of the main reasons why I went to Comic-Con, because they paid me to go out there, and then afterwards I have my own little holiday, which is great, which is why I was thinking...
Christian, are you frozen too, or just Nick?
No, I'm not frozen. Just Nick, sadly. Maybe that might be a good time to start winding it down.
Sure, yeah.
Okay, so Nick, can you hear us? Okay, this is a thing about... Oh, right, he's back.
He's joining.
He says he's back. Yeah, okay. I'll just kill the other one. Hopefully. The little timer will be going around on the bottom of Nick's screen at the moment, so it'll probably appear any second now.
Hey!
There he is.
What happened then?
It happens from time to time.
Yeah. We all back on?
Yeah, I think we're all back, yeah. Okay. Just want to recap on that question, and then we probably need to start winding things down now, Nick.
Yeah, it's fine. I got to pick my kids up. Take them to netball.
thanks for spending the extra time to us. I know we got started late, so thanks for sticking it out with us. I appreciate that. It's
been fun. Got me interested in New York Comic Con now.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I'm telling you, both of them. New York Comic Con is huge. Obviously, it's huge. You get, like, all the Marvel comic books and all that other stuff out of it, you know, whereas Long Island, it's a nice big con, but it's Doctor Who specific. But, yeah, I don't know. I mean, have you been to New York?
I haven't, no. Love to go. I really would love to go.
Especially... Well, New York Comic Con is actually in the Manhattan area, if I'm not mistaken. It's a nice area there. It's a fun place to get around. Long Island is a little bit more secluded.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's fun.
I think I prefer this more, purely Doctor Who conventions, obviously, because that's what I'm doing.
Sure, yeah, yeah.
Like, last year we had the 50th anniversary convention in London, and that was great. Obviously, because I got a lot to talk about. But, yeah, the purely Doctor Who ones should be great.
Cool. Yeah.
Looking forward to that.
Nice. Well, I'll speak to the guys, that's for sure. You have your kids to pick up. Looks like Christian already went to go pick up his kids. So, I agree. We'll probably go ahead and just wind this down. Thanks to everyone for watching now. Thanks to everyone who's listening later. And Nick, thank you very much for being here and sticking it out with us again. Again, we got started late. Technical difficulties aside, I really appreciate you coming by.
No, you're welcome. Thank you very much.
All right. And, you know, we'll chat soon, I'm sure. And I really, oh, by the way, and thank you so much for everything you've done with the props for me, with all the help you provided, and the repair that I won't go into details, everybody, but I'm an idiot, first of all. But Nick's been great about it, so thank you very much for everything.
Is it back yet, or is it still?
You know, it's going to be there today. I just got the tracking information. It's going to be there today, so I'm excited to get it back. Yeah.
Nice. Don't take it apart again.
No. I will play with it. I will put it on my shelf, but there's no taking apart this time. Thanks for pointing that out, though, Nick.
Sorry.
No, it's quite all right. I'm a tinkerer ever since I was a kid. I had a Super Nintendo when I was a kid, or a regular Nintendo, or whatever. And for some reason, I decided, oh, I'm curious. I want to take this thing apart. Well, that didn't work again either after I took it apart. So I don't know why I don't learn my lesson.
You did it wrong.
You're not the only one taking it apart and had to send it back. Don't worry.
Yeah. Don't worry, I won't do it. I definitely won't do it. All right, Christian, you're back. We've just said our goodbyes. Do you want to do recommendations, or do you want to just say goodbye?
Recommendation. I did have a recommendation, actually, but I think I will save it for next time, actually.
Okay.
Although I will give a recommendation, because I haven't watched it yet, but I'm absolutely certain it's going to be really good, and that's Ripper Street Series 3, which has just launched on Amazon.
Oh, nice.
Prime. So that started on Friday. There's two episodes available at the moment, and I think they're releasing episodes every Friday. We'll probably talk about Ripper Street in a little more detail or depth in next week's podcast once we've got James restored, hopefully, from cybernization. And apologies for not being in this podcast very much, although you didn't need me because you got Brian and Nick having a very interesting conversation, which you can now watch and listen to as much as you like, because it's going to be on YouTube, and it's going to be on Audio Boo and Stitcher.com and iTunes midweek, so that's really cool. So I'm going to just get a little bit happy with the buttons and say thanks to Nick Roberto. I'm not giving Brian one. And thanks to Brian Terranova.
Aww.
Okay, thanks very much, Nick. Thanks, Brian. And thanks to you, dear listener, for taking part in this week's podcast with a K. And we'll be back next week. Until then, possibly with Gareth Cavanagh, actually. Until then, goodbye.